Hi everyone, welcome to Training with Casey, where we explore animal training and living our best lives with animals. I'm Joseph Laughlin, producer of this podcast, and now, here's your host, Casey Covert. Let's get started.
Hey, thanks, Joseph, and welcome to Training with Casey. I'm your host, Casey Covert, and I am honored and excited to be talking with my friend and colleague, Denny Simard. And we talked about sats and dressage horses last time, and how Denny has been able to go in and recognize when a horse had resistance because he would be dead-sided or his movement would, you know, somehow be stilted or interfered with. And how Denny was able to go in and free horses from those problems and get to a whole different place in their relationship with their owners. You know, you'd see these reactions from both the horses and the owners, a lot of healing taking place. And one of the things I was thinking of, Denny, is that one of the problems I see over and over again is people have problems getting horses on trailers. And a lot of times they need to get someplace. So the tensions go up, and especially if you rented a trailer or something like that, and you need to do it right now. Did you ever encounter any problems with that? Do you have anything to offer people from your experience with sats and dressage?
I've dealt with it a few times, actually. fortunately, not too often. We talk a lot about Holiday, and the day that I picked him up, very first time we were alone together, and this was on a cattle ranch, and he did not want to get in the trailer. It took five cowboys to wrestle him in. He kicked one of them.
Oh, dear.
And once he got in the trailer, he reared and hit his head. Mm. He did not want to be in there. And incidentally, even after solving that problem with him, I always put a head bumper on him just in case, you know, he never did it again. But so at any rate, we had to do some perception modification and cycling with him over a course of, well, I wasn't under pressure at the time. So I think I took, I don't know, a month, month and a half or something like that. To work with the trailering. But this is so important, and I can tell you more stories, but this is so important because, you know, not only if you're competing, you've got to get to a show. Well, the morning of the show is not the time to start with trailering.
Training, or correction. Yeah.
Or you might have to go to a vet, or you might have to evacuate them in a fire, which Northern California is very familiar with. So that's not dressage related, but it is sats related. I use bridge and target, perception modification, and cycles.
And you got to get them to the sats to the dressage competition, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got any trailering issues, you're going to face them again and again and again until you solve them.
Absolutely.
So but
much better to solve it up front before you need it.
So you gave yourself a month and a half or so to work with Holiday. What was the result?
Oh, he got so used to going to dressage shows that it just became, oh, okay, here we go. Where do I get on?
So he was just truly comfortable with it.
Yes.
And I have a question on that. Did you do a lot of rides of various lengths, or did you just mostly practice getting in and out of the trailer? So did you do cycles just with getting in and out of the trailer, or did you do cycles with the lengths of the ride and the kinds of rides also?
Yes, both of that. The cycles, really have to have an increasing duration to them. If you're just getting on and then getting off right away, they can get that in their head too.
Yeah.
Oh, I stepped in it, I'm backing out.
And then if they can't back out, they can get panicky.
Exactly. So there's got to be an increasing duration there, to where they can just stand it. Ultimately, they can just stand in there without worrying about it.
Yeah. Can I tell people what a cycle is? Because I don't think we've told them yet.
Oh, please do.
So in SATS, we teach something called perception modification, which is teaching animals to change the way they look at things. So if they hated the trailer before, we work with them so that they actually like getting on the trailer. And there's a process that occurs that leads the animals to being able to do this. So first we teach them self-relaxation. And then once we see that they can truly relax themselves, then we start using language to give them options. If you do this, then I'll do this for you. We call that the if-then statement. And we start working them on what we call cycles. And a cycle is just a formulaic way, a formula for increasing the animal's ability to cope with a particular trigger. And the reason it's a formula is because we can't really judge when an animal emotionally has had enough or too much. And we'll constantly, as trainers, we're always in danger of overdoing things. And so with experience and analysis, we've seen what a good rate of progress is while animals are learning to deal with triggers. And we limit the increase in what we do by this formula. So that's what a cycle is, and more on that another time. But that's what we're talking about, where, you know, you not only have to get the horse in and out of the trailer, but he has to not panic if he stays for a longer time, or if the trailer sways, or if the door falls open, that kind of thing. And we handle all of that in a teaching process using these cycles. So he just got to the point where he was just zen with the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, he got to the point where he loved going to horse shows instead of hating it. You know, we won a lot of trophies. And
well, and that's really amazing, because initially he didn't just not like to go in a trailer. He had a very traumatic experience to draw from.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what that was, other than that first day that I picked him up.
Right. But, well, that's what I'm thinking of, you know, because he hit his head. He kicked somebody. I really think animals often realize that if they kick somebody, that could be the end.
Yeah.
So I think that that can be traumatizing for an
officer. Sure. Sure.
So you said you had other stories of trailering being healed.
You know, honorable mention to a fair.
Our beloved affair.
When she was a client, she did not like getting into her trailer. It was small and dark. And I could get her in, but just like I was saying before, she just backed straight out again. And so that was a problem. But when she came to my place, I had a big, bright, wide tall trailer, and she didn't have a problem with that at all. Yeah, so I didn't have to work with her very much, but I give her honorable mention because when she went to Virginia, she was in transport for about 22 hours, and which included two truck drives and two air flights.
Had she ever done an air flight before?
No.
And that was a very long stint.
Like, yeah, it's a long haul.
Physically exhausting.
California to Boston, yeah.
Yeah, and then down to Southern Virginia.
You're right.
And when she came off of that truck, she was so calm and so good.
Yeah, she was so good with us. I was very proud of her for that. The third story was another client horse, whose name, unfortunately, I don't remember. But she would not load into the owner's trailer either. And excuse me. The first day they came to my barn, we tried all afternoon to get those horses into the trailer, and it just wasn't working. Well, my barn wasn't very far away, so we just threw in the towel and took them over to my place, walked them over. So they were with me for about 2 years, and then the owner moved to Southern California. Well, all of a sudden, these horses had to get in a trailer and, you know, stand on their feet for the next 8 hours. Now, the good news there is that I had plenty of time in front. Like I was saying earlier, give it plenty of time. Try not to be under pressure. I had plenty of time. One horse was fine, but the other horse, this old gray mare, she just did not like it in the trailer at all. She threw a fit. We were cycling one day, and she threw a fit so hard that she tore out 20 feet of earth in my fence.
Oh, wow. So there's a trauma right there.
Absolutely.
You know, all that adrenaline and chaos and, you know, whatever, if it scared her. So like the dopamine can be addictive.
Sure.
But
and it blocks function.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You can't, it's very hard to correct on the spot once the animal starts to go over the top.
Right.
When I say correct, I don't mean punish. I mean influence in any way at all.
Well, changing the behavior.
Yeah. So how did you get her past that?
We just started cycling again. And here again, I got an assistant. And she was getting very used to bridges and targets, as much as she needed around the farm, which wasn't a whole lot, but I wasn't training her per se. So just using bridge and target. And as I said, I got her an assistant, and all she did was walk up behind the horse. And I should add something that she'll see in some other trainers' videos, mm-hmm. is a plastic shopping bag on the end of a stick.
Oh, to kind of scare the animal so they're more frightened of you than the trailer?
Or at least of the rattling bag.
Right, right.
This is a perfect example of a failure on my part. I tried that, and that's what sent that horse through the 20 feet worth of fence.
Aha, uh-huh. So you thought you'd take a shortcut.
Uh-huh.
So let's review the SATS process for teaching this kind of stuff ahead of time, because I developed it working with exotic animals, and you just can't even get in there with a little flag. You know, it's just not an option. But I'll say what the steps are as we teach them. And then would you comment, like, Did you use that particular step? How important was it? Is it something you use now, that kind of stuff? So, like, did you tell the horse verbally what you were going to do back at that thing? Okay, so you gave them that anticipation that when you study how to be a teacher for humans, they say is so important, that if you don't tell the kid or the person what it is that you're there to learn, they won't have any way to focus and learn the correct thing.
Yeah.
So you just made sure that you explained what the goal was.
Yes.
And you made kind of light of it, but over and over again, you're recounting situations where the animal wasn't comfortable in another situation, in another person's trailer, where you weren't managing the thing. And then they become comfortable with you, even though they'd had these traumatic experiences. And I think it's great that you have a high, wide, bright trailer. But I also have seen you with horses that were about to just explode, and you have a very calm, anchored resonance with a horse.
Yeah, thank you.
And one, the person that was the farmer that bred Sarah, produced Sarah, took me aside one time and said, "Casey, one thing you need to know when you work with horses is sometimes you have to be forcibly, violently calm." And I have seen you do that without any muss or fuss. I've never seen you. You talked about the five cowboys, and I grew up with cowboys. That kind of implies that you're just going to get a rope in there and take the choice out of it, flip that animal on the ground, get it done, and the heck with the animal.
Yeah.
And that's not the way you do it. That's not the way you do it. And no. The closest you came was to one time use that flag, and you sounds like you decided that that's why you didn't do it. That being a cowboy may appear to work in the short term, but it produces horrendous problems in the long term,
sure.
Including the animal can die on the spot from stress.
Sure.
And of course, people can get hurt, like the guy that got kicked. So you talk to the animal ahead of time. You set certain standards for how you were going to interact. You talk about the bridges. And could you just say for people, what is the purpose of a bridge? What does it sound like? And what does it do for you as a trainer?
Well, there's two bridges, the intermediate bridge and the terminal bridge. In a trailering scenario, I am spending a lot more time in the intermediate bridge, which is XXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXXX
Which tells them essentially they just made it successfully. They completed the task.
Exactly.
So it's just another form of communication, right?
Sure.
So we're talking about bringing the horse into the conversation, telling them what we're going to do, treating them. We don't just overcome their personal sovereignty, their personal, what they're willing to do. You give them feedback with the form of the bridge. What is the role of the target?
Well, it gives them a place to go.
So
in the case of a trailer, they need to be up, where they can be hooked in. or have the gate closed, whatever. So they have to be up front enough.
You can lead them in with a hand target. So for those of you that aren't familiar with this concept, you can put a pole, or we use the handle of a whip a lot of times to lead a horse somewhere. But you can also just use the back of your hand or the fingers of your hand to lead them. But what did you do to get them to the front? Did you walk in with them?
Don't do that.
Okay.
I think in a lot of cases that might be easier, but from my point of view, it's an extremely dangerous place to be. If that horse were to explode like Holiday did that first day, you're right in the path. Or trying to squeeze by them, even if they're in and everything's okay, and then you've got to squeeze by them out of the trailer. I find that a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
So, remote target.
Okay, so explain that.
Needs to be something where you need the horse's head to go. Okay, now, at this point, I'm more towards the rear of the horse, if not completely behind them. And I don't mean in the danger zone. I mean, I'm just behind them. And they have to go touch that target at the front of the trailer,
which then effectively puts them where you need them to be.
Where we need them to be. And at that point, I can close the gate or whatever.
Scoot around up front. We can increase their ability to stay on that target in spite of distractions like the gate closing, using the cycles for those that are trying to envision this. And then you would just go through the cycles, which would be the progressive steps. Oh, Denis, one thing we really have to cover with people, because I see people do this differently all the time, and it can be a real disaster. Part of working in cycles is that we do, undo, and then we rest and analyze the thing with the animal. We actually talk to them about what they just accomplished. And the it's very important to do the analysis and the rest, but that do and undo, because the horse has to be equally proficient at getting out of the trailer.
Sure.
Without panicking, to be able to back out. Mm-hmm. So they're not panicked and trying to turn around or jump around in the trailer to be able to exit. And this is something that I've heard trainers say that, we back chain. We work from the end and go forward. Well, you can't work on trailering that way, because you can't back a horse out of a trailer until you can put them in the trailer. Right. But if you don't do it each step, like we go one step in the trailer, we go one step out, two steps in, two steps out, you could end up with the horse happily going in and being fine until he's not fine, and then he wants to explode.
Yeah.
So those cycles are a really important built-in safety catch. So what was the upshot with the horse that took out the fence?
The upshot was when the trucking company showed up, and she walked right into their trailer like she'd been doing it all her life.
That's beautiful. And again, a really traumatizing, you weren't coming from a neutral situation. You weren't training a new horse for the first time. You had an animal with baggage related to that. And another thing about trailering is not only can there be a lot of baggage about a particular mishap getting into the trailer or getting out, but it's also so much uncertainty. They don't know how long they're going to be in there. It can be exhausting to have to keep adjusting your stance for the movement of the trailer. It can be hot. So it's really something that takes a lot of forethought so that you don't end up with a horse trusting you just going in, and then all of a sudden exploding.
You're right.
You thought you solved the problem.
That's bad.
Yeah, right. Now, I now work with a fare. So I think we should explain that a fare is the name of a horse. So you and I talked about our affair because we're sharing, we co-parent affair. Yeah. Her name, her registered name, is actually an affair to remember. And Denise, you'll I know you'll get a kick out of this, but I had said something to my mom. She said something about how Dave and I got along very well together. And I said, well, we were just saying that we didn't want to get divorced. And I said, Dave, did you change your mind? Do you want to get divorced? And he looked very speculative. And I go, are you going to have an affair? And he goes, just one. I look very speculative. And he goes, my horse is named Affair. Yeah, he got us. We ended up laughing. And I'm such a nerd. I was just like, oh, really? You do want to have an affair? Well, thanks for telling me. Anyway, yeah. So this is something that we are going to be revisiting with a fair, right? And some of the people that listen to this will already know a fair, and they know some of the things she's gone through lately that would rock her confidence.
Uh-huh.
So she's lost some vision. She had an injury, and around that event, it became clear that she had lost vision, even though nobody had seen an event that would cause her to lose her vision. Like, she didn't get really an eye issue or anything that anybody recognized. And yet she has a definite visual problem now, which affects her behavior. So this is one of the things that we can do together when you come out to visit a fair and to work with people out here, and we can actually do these cycles and, you know, help a fair adjust.
Yeah.
Again, to regain her confidence and her mojo. That sure. Girl definitely has mojo.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're not a person that's self-promoting. And so allow me to do this a little bit on your behalf, because Denis, I've seen him take animal after animal that started out with a trauma or a problem. These are, you know, the various cases that he's talked about, but also horses that belong to people that came to seminars that we did at his place or at other places. And it starts with a kind of like a camaraderie, a collaborative perspective with the horse, like treating the horse like an intelligent being, sharing the information that we have with them. And we literally teach them to solve a problem. We don't lead them through the solution of the problem. We let them study it and so on until they learn to solve all of their own problems after we're gone. And that is just such an amazing process, which I've seen you lead some horses through. And I know the stories of like holiday. And maybe at the end of this whole thing, you can tell the holiday story from beginning to end, because that's one of the most beautiful stories that I've ever heard.
Thank you very much. Sometimes it just comes out.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about tonight relative to trailering?
Not to trailering, no.
And where do you want to go next? Have you thought about that? As far as like talking to people about what you're doing with horses?
Well, yes. And this is more aimed at folks who want to compete.
Okay.
Especially in dressage. One of the first things folks will notice about SATS is that it's very verbal.
Yeah.
We talk a lot to the animals in a variety of different ways. Well, if you're going to go, if your intent is to compete at dressage, if you utter a sound, you are automatically eliminated.
Right.
And I'm saying all of this because I don't want the competitor folks to go, "Ooh, I can't do this." Yes, you can. I invented my own term for it. SATS, I mean, Casey, you might have a different term for it. I call it successive substitution.
Okay.
And my short definition of that is translating verbal cues into silent cues. The other thing, if you're going to compete, is you have to look like you are riding in a classical way.
Yes.
Especially on a dressage court. And so this translation, if you will, from verbal to silent involves physical cues. And the thing that I like to say about that is it looks like I'm riding in a classical manner. I'm going to have my leg.
All the cues, the traditional aids, right?
Yes. It looks like I'm doing those exact same things. But in fact, I'm not really manipulating the horse like you would do classically. I've made them into cues. If my outside leg is behind the girth and my inside leg is on the girth, I expect you to take off on the left lead. So the presence of my legs in those positions, very classical position, but I'm not manipulating the horse
at all.
You're
not applying pressure.
Correct.
You're applying information, not pressure. And golly, Denise, people are gonna just flock to you for this. I mean, it is so much work to keep collection.
Ah, yes.
And did it ever occur to anybody that the horse is the actual owner of the body and they can do it easier? They can actually keep collection for themselves, but you have to get them to align with your purpose.
Yes.
And I have seen you do that with a fair, and let's talk about that next time.
Okay.
Let's talk about just the art of collection and what happens when the animal collects itself. Because one of the things I love about that is, as we said on the first talk, dressage is the language of love of horses. But if you're sitting there, you know, applying pressure and distracting them and everything else, maybe they're not feeling so loving. Maybe they're feeling a little frustrated a little pushed around. Whereas when you set a goal and encourage them to expand into that vision, wow, that is a thing of beauty.
I call it enlisting their cooperation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge. A lot of people don't get to that point. It has been so much fun to talk with you, and I look forward to doing another talk where we talk about collection, because okay. That is the holy grail, right?
Pretty much.
So, well, at least it's a big milestone to the holy grail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So let's do it again real soon.
There's more to it than that. They've got to move correctly from the rear. They've got to move correctly in the front. I know that's kind of a throwback to movement, but that's all part of the collected picture.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is for that animal to put himself where you're not pressuring him to have impulsion from the rear or to turn or whatever, but rather that horse has that aim himself or herself to do all that. Okay, well, let's do the next one soon. And thank you very much. And it's such a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
All right. Take care till next time. Thanks very much for being here with us, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Aloha.
Hey, fans. Are you enjoying Training with Casey? Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Casey Covert on YouTube. That is youtube.com/C/Casey Covert. Also, give the podcast a like, share, and comment.
Thanks for joining us. Come back for more news and views on animal training and living with animals. Stay at the top of the pack with Casey. This is Joseph Laughlin, producer of Training with Casey. See you next time.